we are in a range of $9 to $10 a pound now, which is still quite a strong price, and one where we know our project is going to be sort of very, very profitable and generate a lot of free cash flow. If you don't, as an EV maker, have a line on or have the security of supply of things like nickel and lithium and graphite, then you will lose. It's an existential question. If you don't have those elements, you simply can't produce these vehicles. If you can't produce the vehicles, you're going to be out of business.
The Financial Survival Network. Now more than ever. The Financial Survival Network.
Welcome. This is Financial Survival Network. I'm your host, Carrie Lutz. We are doing a sponsor update, which I've been anxiously looking forward to, with FPX Nickels CEO Martin Turin. Martin, it's great to have you back. From the couple of months when we spoke last to now, my God, like, so much has happened. We should talk about the nickel market first, the parabolic move, then its retracement. But we've got a war going on. It's disrupted international trade routes, supply chain of battery metals, especially nickel. And that led to a spectacular move and then a crash.
Yeah, it's been a really unparalleled sort of level of craziness in the nickel market this year. As you mentioned, we saw that short squeeze. Then the nickel price went up sort of fivefold in the matter of sort of 48 hours. It has since come back down, and that short squeeze has started to kind of work its way through the system. And where the LME, the London Metal Exchange, was kind of a broken market for a while, it's starting to sort of get back to health and be a better sort of signal of what the real nickel price should be. So we are in a range of $9 to $10 a pound now, which is still quite a strong price, and one where we know our project is going to be sort of very, very profitable and generate a lot of free cash flow. I think what this, you know, period of volatility, though, I think what it really highlights is security of supply of nickel is a major, major issue, far more so than we see in things like copper and zinc. And in some ways, it's kind of reminiscent of what the oil and gas industry was like before the fracking revolution, where the world was really super, super reliant on Middle Eastern production. We're in a situation now where, you know, something in the region of 65 to 70% of global nickel production is controlled by Russia and China. And so as we move forward in a world that is going to need a heck of a lot more nickel to fuel the EV revolution, I think it's really woken up a lot of consumers to that over-reliance on that Russian and Chinese controlled supply, and shone a bit of a light, frankly, on mines and mining projects that are in more friendly countries. You have this whole theme of friend-shoring happening, where we're having to bring our supply chains and our manufacturing capabilities back home, and that is certainly a prominent theme that we're seeing in our discussions with counterparties as it pertains to nickel and electric vehicles.
And we're looking at the copper to nickel ratio. We talked about that last time we spoke, or the time before, and that is changing. And I think, to me, that's one of the biggest indicators that what we're talking about here, the supply shortage and the changing dynamics of the market, are not going back to the way they were.
That's right. Yeah, that copper to nickel, or let's say nickel to copper ratio, is an interesting one. You go back sort of 30, 40 years, that ratio has tended to trade in the range of around 3 to 1. So the nickel price being approximately 3x the copper price. Through most of the 2010s, we saw that ratio really shrink down to closer to 2 to 1. Which meant that the nickel price was proportionally very, very weak during that period of time. We've since seen it kind of come back to that more traditional 3 to 1 ratio, which is kind of what we would expect to see as a base case going forward. And in a world where people are seeing the copper price needing to be, you know, $3.50, $3.75, $4 a pound or more to incentivize new copper production, That would, you know, translate to a nickel price in the range of $10 to $12 a pound or more, so higher than today's price, and certainly a level at which our planned operation with FPX would be incredibly free cash flow generating.
Right. And talking about the global supply chain, the demand of automakers, now we've seen a race. I don't know if it's real or not, but the announcements are there. All of these companies are snapping up or attempting to snap up supplies of crucial metals because, like we were talking pre-call, if they don't get these metals, it's game over because the shift to EVs, it's inexorable. You see it in certain countries in Europe and Asia, the bigger and bigger slice of the auto market going to the EVs and particularly battery EVs, no hybrid, just working off electric motors. So they've got to be pursuing FPX. They've got to be talking to you because you've got some of the largest untapped deposits of nickel in the world.
They are, and we are talking with a variety of groups. Hard to go into a lot of detail for us, given some of the constraints we have in some of those conversations. But fair to say that we're talking with the chemical companies, with the battery companies, and with the automotive OEMs about the kind of the attractiveness of large scale, low cost and very green nickel production coming from our project in British Columbia on the west coast of Canada here. The car makers here, there will be winners and losers among the car makers of this transition to EVs. The car landscape or the auto industry landscape will not look the same in 10 or 15 years. Some of the incumbents or some of the companies that you see out there today, they won't exist in the form that they do today. There will definitely be some companies that lose out. The companies that win are going to be the ones that are most competitive on two elements of this transition. The first is the sort of the fundamental software that goes into driving these vehicles. That's a huge component of sort of what the value of the EV is, and that's where I think Tesla has traditionally been a leader, and the other car makers are playing catch up. The other key element is really that raw materials, securing those raw materials. If you don't, as an EV maker, have a line on or have the security of supply of things like nickel and lithium and graphite, then you will lose. It's an existential question. If you don't have those elements, you simply can't produce these vehicles. If you can't produce the vehicles, you're going to be out of business. And so there's a real scramble underway. What we've seen is almost with each passing week, you see another automaker announce another procurement deal to secure raw materials right back to the mine source. A lot of those deals have been focused on the next few years. They're still scrambling to secure supply for 2025 or 2026. Once that is kind of taken care of, their view will turn to projects and mines that come online thereafter, and thus our kind of conversations with a number of those groups. Now, it's actually hard for us to keep track of all of the different groups that we're talking to in that regard.
Yeah, well, if you're a procurement officer or official of an automaker and you do a Google search, for untapped nickel resources, undeveloped, FPX is going to come up right on the list. So they're going to be contacting you. I mean, I read Ford Motor expects in 2023 to do 600,000 EVs, and by 2025 or 6, 2 million. So what does that do if we multiply that and figure the entire auto industry, besides Tesla, will be expanding at that rate? What does that do for the demand for nickel? I mean, how many multiples of what it is now is that going to result in?
Yeah, over the next 10 years, you're looking at almost having to double global nickel production to serve that growing appetite of nickel for going into the batteries. So that in and of itself is a virtually impossible task, to be honest. Adding on to that, though, is the fact that all of the kind of the production growth that we see in the pipeline over the next few years is all Chinese controlled in Indonesia. And so if you're a US automaker, you want to you're being compelled to develop domestic or quasi-domestic supply chains that are regional to North America. You're having to look to Canada for nickel production because there is no significant nickel production currently in the United States. And so Canada is actually now considered a domestic partner meaning that we fall under the definition of domestic with respect to what's called the Defense Production Act. So Canadian companies, Canadian nickel deposits are actually considered to be domestic from the standpoint of the United States federal government today. And, you know, we've seen even some draft legislation coming out in recent days that is going to involve federal subsidies for EVs, but only on the basis that those EVs have had their raw materials sourced within that domestic framework. So that is going to cut out the ability of, let's say, non-Canadian nickel to find its way into U.S. Vehicles. And that places a huge premium on nickel coming from a friendly place like Canada.
Right. So when we tie that into what you're doing, and then the fact that your recent metallurgical tests show that that you do indeed have clean nickel, right? And that seems to be what that's at the top of the food chain. That's what really every automaker wants, right?
Yeah, we're blessed with FPX's Baptiste deposit in BC to have the nickel hosted in rock that is very clean, that is very free of things like sulfur and associated deleterious or penalty elements, things like arsenic and antimony and mercury. And so that allows for the fairly straightforward recovery of nickel from being in the rock to nickel being in the form that would be suitable to make EV battery chemicals from. And so that recent metallurgical test work that you alluded to continues to demonstrate the viability of that flow sheet or that process recovery to recover the nickel units into a very high value product that can then be plugged into the downstream into those chemical plants and ultimately to find their way into the EV battery cathodes. So very excited to see that the scale up of our test work has continued to demonstrate those very strong recoveries.
Yeah, it was interesting when I read the release. It basically confirmed your thesis that the nickel you produce won't need to be smelted and can be recovered by less environmentally harmful means, I guess.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So overview of Baptiste and Van drilling and where you're at on each project.
Yeah, so FPX really has sort of two elements to our corporate strategy. The first is the continued advancement of the Baptiste nickel deposit, which is one of the five largest undeveloped nickel deposits in the world. We know when it's in production will be one of the largest nickel mines going. We did some infill drill program, an infill drill program there last year. This year, where our focus is really on metallurgical test work and engineering studies, as well as doing an updated mineral resource estimate in coming months. All of these things are feeding into the next major stage of technical project study, so economic evaluation that we expect by the early to middle part of next year. That will also include a lot of work that we have done from an engineering standpoint and will continue to do from a test work standpoint to show that we can produce nickel sulfate, which is that key chemical that goes in the EV batteries. So lots of news to come in the months to come on all of those fundamental project development activities as it relates to Baptiste. The second element to the strategy is exploration. It's really focused on the discovery potential that we see in areas that are nearby to Baptiste. Last year, we did an initial drill program at what we call the Van Target, which is just a few miles away from Baptiste. We made a major new nickel discovery of a new nickel deposit there at Van. This year, we have just recently recommenced drilling there, large aggressive step-out program to start to understand the size of the prize and to test our hypothesis, which is that the Van Target could ultimately host a deposit that is larger and or higher grade than Baptiste. And so we're very excited about that, continuing to kind of exploit that blue sky discovery potential at Van.
Okay. And so all of this ties in. What are the catalysts coming up as an investor in the company? What can I look forward to here that'll hopefully be reflected in the share price?
Yeah. So with respect to Baptiste, I would say continued scale up of that metallurgical test programs. So we're now currently running a pilot program. Expect those results in the September to October timeframe. that will lead into further test work to show, again, our ability to produce nickel sulfate for batteries. So those are key catalysts on the processing side. With respect to VAN, the key catalysts there are really going to be the release of the drill results from our ongoing program. Those will be also in the fall of this year. And other things that we're working on that we can't quite talk about yet, but there are a variety of other kind of milestones and catalysts that we foresee as we turn the calendar into September, into the rest of the year.
All right. Well, that is an upbeat assessment. And the market is showing that, like I said, the volatility is not going away, and the pursuit by the big players of reliable sources of their battery metals has got to put FPX close to the top of the list. So in any event, appreciate your giving us the update here, Martin. It's always great to speak with you. If you want to find out more, just go over to the company's website, fpxnickel.com. Sign up for the notifications. Ticker symbols on the TSX venture, it's FPX, and on the OTC, FPOCF. Martin, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for giving us the update.
Thanks again, Kerry.
The Financial Survival Network.